all these latent abilities are quite remarkable.
And once he receives training, he will grow to be an outstanding warrior.
He could even end up being the legendary Super Saiyan.
The truth of the matter is that your son Broly's latent abilities are abnormally elevated. Someday that power will likely end up driving him completely insane. When that time comes, he'll be a danger not just to the planet Vegeta, but to the entire universe.
This is Now Playing Podcast review of Dragon Ball Super Broly.
I'll raise Broly to be a mighty warrior on my own, and someday I'll have my revenge.
A Podbean backer exclusive review, chosen by Brian White.
He's relentless when it comes to those Dragon Balls.
Hosted by Justin.
I'm certain he can be of great use to you and your troop.
Arnie.
I've got a bad feeling about this. None of it makes any sense.
And Stuart.
Regarding the Super Saiyan, and the Super Saiyan God, we've researched them extensively.
This podcast is spoiler-filled and contains harsh language.
It's not right for you to say bad things about me.
Listener discretion is advised.
You brought danger to my ship.
We hope you enjoy the show.
This is our chance, my son! Attack!
Today, we're talking about Dragon Ball Super, Broly, starring Sean Schemmel, Christopher Sabat, Vic Mignogna, Christopher Ahrens, Damian Clark, directed by Tatsuya Nagamine. Hello, monkeys. This is Arnie, co-host of Now Playing.
And Stuart.
And this is Justin.
And hello, March patrons. I don't know if that makes you monkeys or not. It's a term of endearment. I say that to all the people that pay to hear us talk about Dragon Ball.
Well, one person paid a lot to hear us talk about Dragon Ball. This month's movie, we're not doing a Dragon Ball retrospective. As I understand, there's like 20 of those movies.
No, you aren't doing a Dragon Ball retrospective.
But Brian White has pledged to have us review this film. He really liked what we did with Pokemon, which I think shocked all of us, because we didn't think when we started Pokemon, we're like, nobody's going to like this. But it ended up being like a cult hit for the show.
I had a good time with that show. It was a surprise series. I agree. It ended up being more than I would have guessed.
Yeah, I was surprised by Pokemon. It wasn't what I was expecting, I'll say that.
Well, it was a compliment, but it ended up stinging. He said it was extremely interesting to hear an older generation's thoughts on a property that he grew up with.
Hey, get off of our lawn, man.
So he wanted to hear us take on this franchise, and he thought Super Broly is the best Dragon Ball film ever made. And this is a line I clung to that he said. He thinks even newcomers to the series will find a lot to enjoy here between the story, characters, and incredible animation. And it's like a prequel to the entire Dragon Ball series, as well as, now he's talking things I don't know, but Stuart, I'll look to you, taking place after the Tournament of Power arc in the Dragon Ball Super series, which is the last story arc that's been released to the time he pledged for this earlier this year. And it's a remake or adaptation of a 1993 movie, Dragon Ball Z Broly, the legendary Super Saiyan. So now I'm into words I don't know.
Well, let's start with that sentiment. Are you guys coming into this with any previous knowledge of anything Dragon Ball, period?
For me, no. I mean, like, having gone to cons and collecting action figures, yeah, I'm familiar with the property. I'm familiar with what the characters look like, but never seen a minute of any of it, so... Yeah, I'm coming in super fresh on this.
I wasn't sure if your son Tyler would have been into this. He would have been about the right age.
Yeah, and I mean, if he was, it wasn't something that was front and center. You know, it wasn't like he was having me sit down and watch it with him. So maybe in his later teen years he might have picked it up, but it was never anything that was on in our house.
And for me, I thought this was part of our video game retrospective. I thought Dragon Ball Z started as a video game. That's all I really knew it as. I could recognize the characters at conventions, and sometimes it is a reference for me for spiky hair. Like, if I over-gel my hair in the morning. I come out and tell Marjorie I'm a Dragon Ball Z character today. That's as far as my knowledge went until this review, where I decided, since I knew it primarily as a video game franchise, I'd go and try some of the video games. I had no idea they started coming out in the late 80s for the old Nintendo system, but I played a few of those, and that's all I knew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what you guys are saying is how I was until 8 months ago when this pledge was made, and it just didn't feel right. The idea that all three of us would be going into this with no knowledge of an entire universe is not what we do here at Now Playing. So somebody, damn it, had to go deep. And I had bought a Goku clock once. So that made me... I was in Chinatown. It was really cute. I didn't even really realize that it was Goku. I was just like, it was the spiky hair thing. I'm just like, oh, I like this dude. And it broke after a week. But like, that made me the fan. And so I dug deep into everything. I'm going to say Dragon Ball. Now, you keep saying Dragon Ball Z. And I think before I did my education, assumed everything was Dragon Ball Z. That was the name of the franchise. But the franchise is actually Dragon Ball, and it originates not as a cartoon, not as a video game. It's a manga. It starts being drawn in serialized form in 1984 and will go approximately 12 years.
Uh-huh.
And I take it you went back and read that.
I read some of it. Now, Dragon Ball is the first chapter, if you will. And Dragon Ball Z, it's Z because that connotates the end of something, like Alpha and Omega. The Z is the last part of the manga, after little Goku has grown up and started a family and found out something really shocking about his origin story. They do a twist that makes Dragon Ball Z a little bit different in tone. But it is all one comic book saga. I read the Dragon Ball Z portion of the manga. That was what I was able to get a hold of. So I couldn't consume everything. I couldn't. There was so much. Like Pokemon, you mentioned Pokemon. It is a lifestyle. I could devote the rest of my years. If I had decades to live, I wouldn't be able to go through everything that exists in all the media formats. But I did want to experience at least how it was on the page. And I will just go ahead and say that is my favorite way to experience Dragon Ball. I actually feel like it reminded me of when I used to collect Akira comics back in the 80s. There would be these spectacular battle scenes where literally hundreds of pages, you would just watch these massive destruction, and just, it was fun in that way. It was a really good art, and I really appreciated the way that it was put down on the page.
I got a hold of the manga and started reading a little bit of the first one. I was shocked. I mean, I know manga is all ages, but this was some pretty risque stuff that I saw in those early issues.
Oh, yes. Pokemon, I remember that being very tranquil, right? I remember that feeling like a lulling sensation, like you just wander through forest and nothing real bad is ever going to happen. Sure, some pocket monsters are going to fight each other, but nobody really gets hurt, right? And so, you know, it was COVID, and I had nieces, underage nieces, I'll just put that out there, that were really getting into anime. Their favorite is My Hero Academia, and they had seen the Pokemon live-action movie, they had played Pokemon Go, they were looking for a distraction. I said, let's watch the first season of Dragon Ball together. And yes, one of the first things you'll realize about how they're different is that Dragon Ball has a very risque sense of humor. I'm not going to say it was any more adult than Pokemon, because I feel like a lot of it is still very juvenile. But by episode 6, I just told my nieces, please turn this off, because the main heroine was being roofied by a pig in a communist regalia outfit who was trying to rape her in her sleep while the hero couldn't get an erection. I mean, it was like, wow, I can't even ever remember. Like, even Fritz the Cat, I'm just like, what are they going for here? Like, one of the main characters is actually, like, a serial sexual assault. Like, the Master Roshi, like, goes around and just, like, grabs women's breasts. He's kind of like a Benny Hill character in the series. He's this poor little hermit that lives on a turtle island. And boy, you take him out, you know, real lonely guy, you take him off that island, and he's just a nightmare. Like, some of these characters It reminds you that, yes, Japanese culture has always been, pop culture has been a mixture of inappropriate and cutesy. And I think that Dragon Ball skirts that line much more heavily than Pokemon ever did.
So yeah, that would be my big question is, I mean, starting as a manga, was this aimed more at kids or teenagers or adults? But it sounds like it's just kind of cultural, you know, it lives in that space.
Well, actually, the real root of everything, what the animator said he was going for, was a classic Chinese novel from the 16th century. It's called Journey to the West. It's about a little monkey boy, a boy with a monkey tail who it's sort of like a Buddhist fable. You know, he goes on a road trip out west and experiences life lessons, Zen moments. And the animator was thinking, how can I bring that to a contemporary 80s audience and bring in elements of, yeah, just American pop culture? Like, I don't think I have to point out to you guys, you're going to see Star Wars in here. You're going to see Superman in here and superheroes. Terminator, there was a whole several years devoted to robots from the future coming and changing destinies and alternative timelines. Like, yeah, it really was a way of saying, how can I take some of like a classic literature novel, kind of like what Baz Luhrmann did with Romeo and Juliet, maybe, and just really hip it up and make it something that youth today would really respond to.
So, okay, starts life as a manga. Then what's next? Does it become video game? Does it become a series?
I guarantee you some of the video games came before the series, because there were video games in the 80s, some of which weren't even named Dragon Ball because they thought nobody would know what the manga was it was based on.
Yeah, I think it all kind of hit at once. The manga hits it in 84. The cartoon appears in Japan in 85. And I think you're right, Arnie. I think there are, I don't know, were they made for consoles? Were they made coin-op? What did you play? What did you experience? I didn't do video games. I had my hands full with other stuff.
They were console games. And if I went back to the old Nintendo, which is where I started, in 1986, came out a game called Dragon Ball Daikoryo, I think. But that was only released in Japan. The one I was able to start with was called Dragon Ball. I'm not even going to try to butcher the Japanese. In America, it was released as Dragon Power. Again, 1986, who would know what Dragon Ball is? And it was this game, oh boy. Apparently, it had to be censored for America because you're playing as Goku, and you're going around fighting monsters and people and things. But in the Japanese version, if you get low on health, to power up, you grab a pair of women's panties.
Are you sure that's not Roshi? I'm telling you, Roshi was always grabbing women's stuff.
And then in the American version, they're like, let's change that to a piece of cake. So
hey, whatever. What's the difference?
I did watch some Cliff Note videos on the history of Dragon Ball Z, and at some point in all this lore, one of the characters uses the Dragon Balls to wish for a pair of women's panties. So that's obviously a theme somewhere in here.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's just get to the gist of it. You're right. If people don't know anything, all you really need to understand is, like Pokemon, it's a quest show. This little boy is going to go out looking, instead of looking for pocket monsters, he's looking for seven spheres of magic that, when brought together, resurrect a dragon, and he can grant you one wish. So it's really a really long way around trying to get your wish fulfilled. And along the way, he also stops and competes in fighting tournaments. So it does have that Pokemon element as well of all of a sudden we'll spend a lot of time watching people train and use new techniques, fusion. We'll see some of it in the movie today, but there's lots of powers to bestow.
So imagine an MMA fighter who's also Indiana Jones on the weekend looking for lost relics.
Well, I would actually say he's Indiana Jones, but every now and then he needs to pick up some street fight money or something like that. It's the show is still primarily, or at least Dragon Ball, that first 5 years was really about trying to get the Dragon Balls. And then in the Dragon Ball Z era, Goku grows up, he gets that family, and then his space brother comes down and says, you were actually came from another planet, not unlike Superman. You were sent here from a dying world, but you were supposed to kill it. You were supposed to conquer this place. You were supposed to enslave humanity. What have you been doing all of this time? So it sort of changed the dynamic. We will see some of that get repurposed here in the movie. I think what the donor was really talking about is you're going to get a lot of the origin for who Goku is, or Kakarot, as he was originally named. He had his space name and then his Earth name.
Kal-El and Clark.
Yeah, pretty much. That all comes out in the movie here, and it's been told numerous times in the saga.
Yeah, most of the games I found were like Mortal Kombat. They were all fighting games.
Mm-hmm. That's what I would imagine from the comic book, is that you are going to have like chi levels and you've got a, like, you know, a fighting power. Like, I imagine there's a scroll or something that says how much energy you have to fight with, and you can use that to do moves and take on various bad guys.
So there's, as I understand, 20 movies here. Did you watch all 20? I mean,
no, I couldn't do that. And more to the point, the movies really aren't the thing. What people really loved is the manga story. And so Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z are the expansion of that story. Now, they inflated it and put in digressions and extra storylines and characters that made it go on much longer than the original manga. It took liberties, but in the end, it honored the work of the author, and that's what people liked. And when the author said in 96, I'm not going to write this anymore, and Dragon Ball is done, they tried to continue with a series called Dragon Ball GT. I mean, he was supposedly involved, but it was mostly new writers. They tried to turn the main character back into a little kid again with a monkey tail, and he went to outer space. It was horrible. It was horrible in the ways that you would expect a franchise that no longer has a point but wants to make money was, and it was canceled. Very, very quickly. So Dragon Ball didn't do anything for a long period of time. Between 97 to 2009, there wasn't anything happening with that franchise. But there were movies scattered throughout that were not considered canon. All of the movies were independent people writing a storyline and trying to stick it into the saga, whether it really fit or not. And oftentimes it just came off as episodic. You'd have a new villain introduced and defeated within the movie. And I use the word movie loosely. Most of those feature films that did run in Japanese theaters were only about 50 minutes.
I mean, just from the little bit that we learn in this movie before we get into it, I feel like this franchise could be set up for something like that. I mean, we see time travel to a certain degree. We see people going from place to place without necessarily needing ships or anything like that. So if there's a franchise that can just kind of hop around and tell an isolated story, this seems like one that would work for that.
Well, yeah, if all you really care about, and I do think the best thing that Dragon Ball can do is give you a great fight. I will just put that out there right now. When I enjoyed it most, it was usually me holding the manga, watching a really cool villain like Cell, like, have at it with our main characters. And it wouldn't even be uncommon for a villain to suddenly become a good guy, like Piccolo. We'll see him in this movie. It's kind of hard to keep a track on him because sometimes he's bad, sometimes he's good. That's a pretty common theme in there. So in that way, it might get confusing. You might watch a movie and be confused as whether the character you know is going to be working for or against Goku. But by and large, yeah, you can drop in and out of any of the movies in any order and probably not get too confused. I will say this. There is one live-action movie. In 2009, Hollywood tried to get in the game. Fox Studios said, let's hire some white people and we'll do it with Justin Chatwin from, I don't know, I think he had some teen movies. We'll spike his hair with some gel and we'll try to do it in a Mighty Morphin style. Do you guys know about Dragon Ball Evolution?
I only know about it because I looked it up. I somehow remained blissfully unaware of it when it was released. And honestly, I probably in some part of my mind knew that a Dragon Ball movie came in, what was it, 9th at the box office that weekend, and I just assumed it was another cartoon.
Mm-hmm. No, Chow Yun-Fat's in it. They tried. I'll say a lot of people that are, again, loyal to that manga and the original universe, the first two series were like, oh, this is crap, and it is crap. But I think that it at least reminded people that, hey, there might be an appetite for new Dragon Ball movies. And that's when Japanese animated movies started being made again. They actually remade Dragon Ball Z as Dragon Ball Z Kai. They just basically said, we're going to do it all over again, only this time we'll be a little more faithful to the book, and we won't go on so many wild digressions. Maybe the animations are slightly better. And that sort of brought the franchise back to life again. And it ended up meaning that the author that walked away from it all, Akira Toriyama, like finally said, you know what? I would like to write for Dragon Ball again. And he created, about 6 years ago, Dragon Ball Super, a new series that concluded with this movie. So he went beyond his original story. There is a part three, if you will, after Dragon Ball Z supposedly brought everything to a conclusion. And this movie is going to sort of sum up everything that was done in movies that he didn't originally have in his manga. Meaning that Broly, the main protagonist of this series, only existed in the movie universe, which was considered outside the anime and the manga. This was the original author saying, I will finally do a Broly, and bringing it in. So that got a lot of people, I think, that were into it excited, because Broly is one of the best villains in the movie universe.
Yeah, I didn't know coming to this, first of all, if it was Brawly or Broly. Broly kind of sounds like a surfer term, and then I just thought it was Super Broly.
Yeah, I know. It works any way that you want to mangle it, right? Dragon Ball Super Broly, Dragon Ball Super Broly. I don't know. It never makes, it doesn't trip off the tongue. And again, that title is Americanized. I think when it came out in Japan, they kept the Broly part a secret. I think it was a surprise to people that they were bringing that character in. And again, it would have been a big deal. I compare it to Harley Quinn. If you think about the fact that Harley Quinn was created in a Batman cartoon and not in a comic book series, when she finally got incorporated into the comic books and then now as part of the DC universe, there's a similar sentiment in the fact that the original author has taken Broly and legitimized him and made him part of the canon now by putting him in the Dragon Ball Super universe.
Oh, yeah, that's cool. Stuff like that happened in Star Wars, too, where an EU author would create a character and then Papa George would end up writing them into the next movie.
Yeah, that's the term I'm looking for, EU. The movies are largely EU, and frankly, I don't know that a lot of them are considered good. But Broly was a character that appeared in 3 EU movies. Now he's getting his legit movie, and that's what we're here to talk about today.
All right, I think that's enough preamble. Arnie, why don't you kick us off with a little plot summary?
In the beginning, a short, evil Lord Frieza, which is what my mother calls a freezer. She's from Maine. It's a Frieza.
You make that joke, but that's actually where that came from. A lot of the villains in Dragon Ball literally come from a freezer. There's Garlic Jr., Kakarot, I think, is a carrot. Like, yeah, there's a lot of food villains.
A short, evil Lord Frieza uses his power to destroy a planet. That planet was Vegeta. Vegetable?
Not Velveeta.
Home of the Saiyan warrior race. While the Saiyans were subservient to Frieza, he feared an eventual uprising. We jump about 40 years later and find a handful of Saiyans still exist throughout the galaxy. On Earth live 2 warriors, Prince Vegeta, who was an infant when the planet was destroyed, and his friend Goku, who's also named Kakarot for some reason.
That's his space name.
And when the two hear 6 Dragon Balls have been stolen from their friend Bulma, the fighters go to the frozen tundra where their 7th Dragon Ball is. They intend to confront the thief who stole the 6 Dragon Balls. On the other side of the galaxy, on an inhospitable world, another Saiyan lives, Paragus. He and his son Broly were exiled to this world decades ago. They're rescued by 2 of Frieza's soldiers, Chilai and Limo, who are on a mission to scour the galaxy to find strong warriors, and Broly's combat power is off the charts. Broly and Paragus are taken to Frieza, and to test Broly's power, Frieza takes Broly and Paragus to Earth, where, on the tundra, Brawly fights first Vegeta, then Goku. Brawly beats both of them until they take on their Super Saiyan forms, and as Brawly starts to lose, Frieza kills Paragus and blames it on the two Earth Warriors. This sends Brawly into a rage, and he beats both Super Saiyans. They trick Brawly into attacking Frieza, then Goku and Vegeta teleport to see Fightmaster Piccolo, who teaches them the fusion dance technique where their jam allows them to combine into a single super warrior named Gogeta.
Take that, Voltron.
Gogeta returns to the tundra and defeats Brawly. Brawly is finally saved from the beating by Chi-Lai and Limo, who took a liking to the laconic fighter. The two used the seven Dragon Balls to summon the dragon Shenron, who grants them a wish to teleport them and Brawly to planet Vampa. Outmatched, Frieza runs away, vowing to fight another day.
This word salad is delicious. Keep going.
That's how I felt writing it.
The lemon and the chili did what with the broccoli? I don't know. Yeah, it's crazy.
We need to swing by Planet Ranch real quick just to get a little flavor.
Just for a dip. Yeah, I know. It's crazy making. Believe me, I got over it. Like, you do something, anything for 8 months, and the absurdity kind of washes over you. Like, you're like, eh, whatever. Who was this cornstarch? Who's this villain? Like, you're just like, okay, I can't be faced. Although I will say this, just going to throw it out there, to this day, I can never get over something that I watched. If you're curious to know the most painful moment I experienced, even worse than the pig roofying the heroine, Google B-U-U ice cream. I'll just leave you with that. Boo ice cream. Boo ice cream is, yeah, the series at its most crazy making. But there's a lot of crazy making here. And pretty good job, Arnie. I will say, I was pretty impressed. You kept it to the brass tacks.
If somebody knows who these people are, they'll follow what I said.
Yeah, I think so.
But for even me who wrote this, I'm like, this is a lot of Gorky Frieza fusion dances.
Hey, and you know what? I can't even judge a franchise for that, because this is innate in any franchise. Take Star Wars, take Game of Thrones, take anything, and once you get used to the names, it's no longer nonsensical. But it's just hearing these for the first time in rapid succession, it does feel like word salad.
Lore can be hard to penetrate, and the people that are in it are like, why are you having a problem? And the people that can't get through it are always like, how can you take this seriously? So yes, maybe you're going to choke a little bit on these names, on these concepts. But yeah, I think you got it, Arnie. Let's get into it. Now, as you already stated, this was done as sort of the, a lot of these story elements are the kickoff to Dragon Ball Z, where we're learning that Goku was not just some innocent monkey boy, but in fact, I don't know if it's really clear in this movie.
It's not.
By the light of the full moon of Earth, he actually transformed into a giant ape, and that was what was supposed to conquer and kill humanity. And because he lost his tail, he lost his ability to do that. But when Vegeta, who I think you described as his friend, he actually came to Earth to finish the job of enslaving Earth and fought quite a bit. But Vegeta eventually came to Earth actually not to team up with Goku, but actually to fight him and trying to dominate the Earth, the whole planet.
Yeah, there was a moment in this movie early on where they're like, don't stare at the moon or you'll turn into a great ape. And I'm like, wait, did he say ape? Did he say,
yes.
I thought for a moment, grape ape? I'm like, what in the hell? I'm disappointed nobody turns into an ape this whole movie. I was really let down by Chekhov's great ape.
I think Broly gets big because he summons that power, even though his father mentions that he cut off his tail. It's a passing line of dialogue. It won't mean much if you don't know those episodes where Goku was going through his werewolf-like transformation. But yes, the thing to take away here is that it's powerful for Goku to realize that he's not an Earthling, but in fact had this destiny and is connected with this whole race of people that were wiped out, the Saiyans.
Yeah, this beginning is a little confusing at how fast it kind of comes at us, because, I mean, I'm not even sure if they let us know up front that we're starting way, way in the past.
41 years ago, from what I don't know.
But no, I mean, we start off, we get to see Frieza's dad announcing his retirement and coming to the planet King Cold.
King Cold! I definitely saw a theme between King Cold and Freeze. I was surprised they didn't have ice powers.
So yeah, that kind of kicks off a little bit of a backstory for Frieza, who ends up disappearing for a little bit of this movie and until he comes back to this planet to completely destroy it.
I followed this entire prologue pretty well. I mean, when we start, the very first thing that hit me is, wow, I came in with low expectations, but this animation is great as Frieza's ships are going to the planet. Oh, wait, no, that's just the ships are going to be 3D rendered. I briefly thought we were in for a Pixar level thing. No, we're in an anime. We're definitely in an anime once the people show up.
We're in a really good looking anime. I point you to any Dragon Ball prior to this at all, and you will not see animation on this level. I definitely think that they upped their game big time with the color palette and the level of detail. But you're right. It is within the style of anime. If you have a problem with sort of the stiltedness of character movements and the stylization, those remain. It is an anime. It's not an animated film. It's an anime. But I would say, I agree, it is the best looking Dragon Ball I've ever seen.
Oof, I had some real problems with the choppiness of it all, and I guess that's just the style. They want to be choppy, but nothing moved smoothly. Everything was like at too low of a frame rate.
I mean, stylistically, I lean more towards Stuart, you know, where it looks really good, and I think they effectively use different 3D elements where needed. I mean, there's explosions in here that you can tell are 3D models, and some of the ships are. But for the most part, it all comes off feeling like a classic hand-animated anime.
Yeah, if you like that style. Arnie, have you ever liked an anime? Did you ever follow an anime? I've never, like, mine was Akira and Ghost in the Shell, I guess, or a little bit. Miyazaki. Are you a fan of any in the genre?
Only if Voltron counts. I mean, I've seen the Guyver, both of them, and I've seen Akira, and I've seen this, and no, it is not my jam. But Voltron I liked growing up, and it felt more complex than most of the kids' cartoons when they killed Sven and then he came back.
Okay, yeah, Voltron counts. Like, all right, so you have the capacity to like the stilted stylization that's here.
I mean, I liked Voltron when it was on, and now I like it nostalgically. This will always be a steep curve for me, and it's a cultural thing. I'm going to completely say, you know, this may be exactly what they're going for with an anime, and that's just not something I'm overexposed to. I am more used to Western animation, and so I like how this looks if everything was a still. It is specifically the motion to it, but I like the shading and the shadows and the way King Vegeta's shadows fall all over his face and the hairstyles. I mean, it's artistically interesting, but yet it just feels like a 90s cell cartoon from the States, the way it is kind of choppy in that way.
Yep, I agree with all of that. I think you're right to say that it does not have the fluidity that someone that likes cutting edge animation would expect. One thing, you guys mentioned that Frieza comes in and comes out. Frieza is probably the most beloved enemy of all Dragon Ball. He doesn't have to do much here. It's like Darth Vader showing up at the beginning of Star Wars. Like, if he doesn't come back for another hour, people remember that he's in this because he is really cool. He had a huge arc. And again, he's the guy that killed Goku's papa and all of his people. So he occupies a place in the lore that's quite high.
Yeah, I think that was my first big takeaway from this movie, is just how brazen they are with just casual death. I mean, we see the destruction of an entire world, and then later on we see Broly's father just straight up murder the guy who ended up on the ship with them, just for no reason other than the fact that they didn't have a whole bunch of food.
Yeah, I will say that I had no trouble following this prologue, but there is a steep learning curve because when Frieza comes in and is giving weapons finders to these people, but then blowing up their turrets because guns are aimed at him, I didn't know if Frieza was the bad guy or if King Vegeta was the bad guy. I'm like, whose side am I supposed to be on here? Especially when King Vegeta then goes to see his son in an incubator and is pissed off that a commoner boy is also in an incubator in the same room. It just took me a moment to get my bearings as to who was going to be the villain that they fight this movie.
You make an interesting point that we do not get to Goku for quite some time. And he would be the central focus you'd want to let people know early. It's, what, about 25 minutes before we get to him.
Yeah, and I don't know that I can hang that on the movie, because we are some dudes just dropping into this franchise and trying to catch up. But yeah, I had that same issue, Arnie. I wasn't sure who the bad guy was. I could not follow along for certain to say, okay, who is the hero we're going to be rooting for here? I mean, early on, I felt like it was Broly.
I feel like you could argue that we're going to meet four father figures here in the beginning, and three of them have shades of darkness. Three of them are not heroic, even though all of them are very loyal to their sons. They want them to thrive, and so you can maybe respect them all. You know, King Cold is going to give Frieza his own planet to oversee, but by the way, he is a slave master, and these people work for him enslaving other worlds that they then, like, house flip and sell for a profit. So, like, it's a dark world.
So, the king has his prince in this chamber, but there's Broly also there, who's the son of a commoner.
Well, he's a colonel.
Whose powers are off the charts. So he's like Anakin Skywalker. Too many midichlorians. And the king doesn't like having somebody who isn't his son so powerful. So he jettisons this baby off to a planet.
Essentially banishes him. And maybe there's some logic to this. Maybe you could make the argument. It's going to be made at the end of the movie. Hey, if you have this much power surging through you, that's just like a live wire that could, like, kill anyone that goes near it. So, like, you don't want to be around this. This is a bomb waiting to go off. But I do think Colonel Paragus is right to call out jealousy. Essentially, King Vegeta wants to keep it in the dynasty. Oh, of course, my child is going to overtake Frieza. He's going to be so powerful that he'll eventually overthrow our overlord and he'll rule the universe.
And here I start preparing myself for a Moses parable with Broly. No, not exactly.
Well, I mean, I don't think you're wrong to... I mean, I did. I think it's very common, particularly if you look at Eastern religions, to see within Dragon Ball lots of parallels. I mean, there's just whole subplots I can't get into where characters die and go to astral planes and get reincarnated. And they definitely court the spiritual in this. So if you are seeing parallels to biblical figures, I say go with it. I think that's a fair reading.
Well, I'm able to follow this prologue so far. You know, I understand the idea of the jealous king and banishing this one child off to this desert planet. I got that. A little bit later on, I believe it's Goku's dad who comes back to the planet when called and decides he feels something bad's coming, so he sends their son off to Earth. So that's how Goku gets to Earth. But then a little bit later on, I think it's just kind of a dropped line that we're on some other planet and they're talking about how Vegeta had been destroyed. And one of the guys says, yeah, I think my brother got sent to Earth or something like that. Is that the other character we end up seeing with Goku when we get to Earth?
Yes. Okay, yes.
So wait, Vegeta on Earth isn't the baby from the incubator?
Yes.
Yes, he is or yes, he isn't?
I'll walk you through baby steps. When we first see Prince Vegeta, I'm just going to call him Prince. Prince, because the king is the king, and the king will die on this planet. Like most Saiyans, he'll be wiped out when Frieza drops the bomb. But he has a son, and when we first see him, he's in an incubator, and then some amount of time passes, and he grows up, and he has led a troop of people, including Goku's brother, Raditz, to just be off-world, and they decide not to go back home when they're called by Frieza. So yes, they survive. The reason why Vegeta, Prince Vegeta, is alive to continue the adventures in this movie because he disobeyed and was off on a planet when he should have been on his homeworld getting blown up.
Okay, so that's how Prince Vegeta lived. I was very confused by that because we get to see Goku sent off Earth. We get to see Broly sent off Earth. Vegeta leaving the planet, we don't see that.
Yes, right. It's lines of dialogue. And that's never the best way to convey that. Also, just the passage of time is strange. If you introduce someone as a baby, I don't know that you'll make the connection when you see him as an adult with spiky hair in a spacesuit. You know, like that's the baby. I don't know that you would naturally pick that out. But yes, that's who Prince Vegeta is.
And Goku is his brother on Earth, then, that he's referencing?
No. I want to keep this simple and it's impossible. Goku has a brother who's working for the prince, who is murdered not in this movie. You'd have to watch Dragon Ball Z.
But he is in this movie. He's the one with the gruff little voice who makes the comment that his brother was sent to Earth.
Yeah, I jokingly called him Radish. His name is Raditz.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I'm trying not to focus on characters whose stories are not illuminated by this particular movie, even though almost everyone that pops up here, and there are many bizarre cameos that must mean nothing to you, or raise serious questions that I could go, oh yeah, they have a whole saga.
You know, I'm still fine with this prologue. I did not catch how Prince Vegeta lived, but I agree with Brian, our patron, that this early stuff I get. I mean, when Frieza comes back and destroys the planet, I'm like, okay, we got a Darth Vader thing going on here. His finger is the Death Star. That's some awesome power that he could just point and blow up an entire planet, and King Vegeta is powerless to try and stop it, and everybody's exceedingly blasé that there's only like 7 Saiyans left in the galaxy, but...
That, I think that's where I'm getting most confused, is about just the blasé nature of like mass destruction, and then, you know, a few scenes later, we're listening to Frieza talk about what he's going to wish for when he gets all the 7 Dragon Balls together, and it's basically to grow 5 centimeters taller.
This is funny to me, is because a lady has 6 Dragon Balls, she's gathering the 7th, she wants to be 5 years younger, because nobody will really notice 5 years. If it's 10 years, they're going to wonder who her plastic surgeon is. And here, on the other side, we get Frieza, who wants to be 5 centimeters taller, because if he goes any bigger than that, people will notice. So I like that there's a parallel between how they both want to subtly use this wish to convince people that it's natural.
And that is a theme. You think that, like, these quest movies, oh, if I assemble 7 Dragon Balls and this dragon appears and he'll let me do anything that I want, that, like, you'll wish for world peace or to live forever, or, you know, people have some ambitious ideas, but ultimately they do end up being things like, I want underpants. Like, as we talked about earlier, it is sort of a joke that the quest usually ends with the wrong thing being requested, and they have to do it all again because the Dragon Balls, after you make that wish, they go zipping around back into hiding throughout the universe, and you have to find them all over again.
Okay, that answers that question. I wondered if you had all 7 balls, what was limiting you to one wish?
Yeah, they do show that. I don't know that they explain it, but they do show the Dragon Balls, you know, flying off in different directions. But they do drop some hints as that's a running theme with the wishes, is that you need somebody who knows how to properly form a wish to get it granted correctly.
Right. I wish they had edited out the moment. I know that they want to establish that Prince Vegeta lived, but I do agree, like, the fact that we have him acting like, I don't really care that my homeworld blows up, and then we don't know when we get back to present day how he's hanging out with Goku, who used to be called Kakarot, and is now, like, there's just too much to explain here. You do kind of wish that they would do more to help the newbie. Or at least I kept feeling for you guys, thinking, like, wow, you're skipping over too much for this to be relatable, like, as we flash forward to present day.
I intentionally didn't research much about Dragon Ball because of Brian's line that newcomers to the series could find a lot to enjoy between the stories, the characters, and the animation. And I did watch this twice for this review to make sure that my first impressions were correct. And the moment we jump 41 years into the future, I'm like, no. just not happening. They start referencing things that have happened in those 41 years.
It's not 41 years. It was 41 years ago, but I actually think it's several hundred years. That, if you watch the counter, like, it's been hundreds and hundreds of years. By the way, there's also, like, multiverses. Like, this is only one version of Goku's life. Like, it's really Universe 7. Again, it's so dense.
Yeah, the questions only get bigger.
Yeah, but there's all these characters around, like a war master. There's this god of war there, and there's Goku and Vegeta fighting each other. And I'm like, and they're on Earth? Where are humans? One of them has a tail. Boom. Lost. Who are these people? I was thinking back to Pokemon, you know? You learn who Ash and his mother are and everything, and Professor Oak and all of these people. I learned them through watching multiple movies, but I feel like these characters are like those sub-characters who, if you watch the show, you know. But if you're coming in, Justin, were you as lost as I was as to who these people are? It is never explained.
Coming into this, I knew that there was years and years of stuff ahead of this, so I knew that I was not going to be able to follow along. I was happy enough that I figured out who all these modern-day versions of the people that they had just spent the previous half hour setting up, who they were now grown up. So I followed that far. But then they throw all these new characters at us in 10 seconds, and none of them stuck with me. None of them.
Yeah, don't worry about, like, who's hanging out at the pool. The important one to ask is, because I think you can not get it, when back on planet Vegeta, Bardock puts his son in the pod, and they have sort of like the Disney moment of mama crying and him floating away. Did you understand that that is modern day Goku? Kakarot became Goku and he is a Saiyan.
I did get that. I did get that this boy whose father, I mean, just total Kal-El. The father's like, something's going to happen to our planet.
Yes.
I'm going to send him off to Earth. I'm like, is he going to be found by farmers? That's kind of where I expected it to go.
Yeah, actually, he was. He kind of was.
Oh, okay. Well, we don't get to see that.
If you go back to Dragon Ball, yeah.
But I did get Goku was the boy from Vegeta. It was Prince Vegeta that threw me for a loop as to how he got there.
And yeah, there's just no way to convey to you all the betrayals and flipping sides. But he came to Earth midway through the saga to destroy it and is now hanging out at Club Med. How do we get there? I can't help you. I don't know. I don't really like Vegeta. I was kind of sad that he was going to be a focal character. But when realizing that they were retelling the saga of Planet Vegeta, I don't think you can leave him out. So, yes, I call him a frenemy. He is not exactly a friend to Goku, but they have an alliance, and obviously we will see them be able to meld into one being later. His wife, by the way, is Bulma, the blue-haired woman who has the Dragon Ball stolen. That is Vegeta's human wife.
Had no clue.
And I suppose it meant nothing that, like, her Google Watch goes off and a kid with purple hair calls named Trunks. Trunks is a major character.
I thought he was a vandal and was calling to report somebody stole it because he did something. I thought he made the mess. That's
no, believe it or not, like, he's like Michael Biehn from Terminator. Like, he is their child in the future they haven't had yet, who comes back in time to warn them about a robot takeover.
In my research after watching the movie, just to make sure I understood the lore and stuff like that, Trunks is a major character who ends up living in his own, like, his own universe type of thing, because he time traveled so much, apparently, that he just doesn't exist on any prime timeline, I guess.
Yeah, I don't want him to exist in mine. I never liked Trunks, but yeah, he is very popular. You know, as Goku got older, they kept looking for little boys to sort of replace what he did early in the saga. And so he was sort of like the little kid that would play with Goku's kids.
So as a plot device goes, though, isn't it a little bit weak that, like, if the big MacGuffin of not only this movie, but the entire franchise is collecting these 7 Dragon Balls and getting your wish fulfilled, Wouldn't you think that you'd have him under better watch and lock than that, than having him just sitting on your desk where two doofuses can break in easily?
You know, it's so casual, though. Again, I can't stress enough how, like, I remember early on when I was watching the series, I'd be like, oh, they finally have them. By, like, episode 30, I'm like, I thought this would take years, like, for them to find seven balls, and they had them all.
Kind of like Ash winning one tournament.
Yeah, like, but, like, then it just scatters again. Like, it's not really a big deal that they get them together and get the dragon out. I feel like that ends up happening a lot. So, like, she's kind of like, eh, I know where the seventh one is anyway. We'll go and get it, and we'll barter, and...
She'd known for a while and just was too lazy to go.
And again, her whole wish is tied up in her vanity, so she can't be proud that she's expending all of this energy just to be 5 years younger. So again, I think it's part of the not always translatable humor of this series that sometimes the missions are petty and of silly purpose.
And it's crazy that we've only been talking about this movie for, you know, 5-10 minutes now. We are dangerously close to being out of plot here, folks. Like, we get to, I believe it's Antarctica, they just call it the ice continent,
mm-hmm.
where the seventh ball is, and they get there about the same time as these two minions of Frieza's have gotten there just before them, and they've located that seventh ball, and so they're going to go to try to get that, and that's when all hell breaks loose. Frieza shows up with his new bounty, which is Broly.
Yeah, you've skipped over that part. Like, we have really not spent probably enough time on Broly in the Broly movie. Like, yes, he was banished as a little child and then grew up in sort of a harsh environment. He is found by other Frieza minions who are named after food products, lemon and chili or something like that.
Yeah, and this is years later. This is after he's been banished and his father went there and he raised him on this harsh planet and he's all grown up now. So they somehow survived years and years on this planet with nothing but monsters and boiling pools of water.
Yeah, I mean, you'll see them later eating these, like, ladybug kind of innards, and, like, he's never had water before. Like, they give him a cup of water. He's like, oh, what is this? So, like, he's really deprived, Broly. He's really, like, not had the upbringing most people would relate to. And again, he could grow into a big ape because Saiyans, when they are in the light of the full moon, take on that monstrous form. But because his dad cut it off, he was afraid. His dad is basically, the moral of the story is the dad knows his son is so powerful, he's doing everything to control him. So he's cut off his tail and he's outfitted him with this, like, punk collar that's, he can implement shock treatment whenever necessary.
And they've survived on this brutal planet for low these however many years, 40, 400. But when Frieza's people come and get them off, the father, does he know Frieza destroyed the planet? I mean, what's said in dialogue between them is a meteor hit the planet. Is there any reason that the father would have to suspect Frieza for the genocide? Or is it that the father's evil enough to just sell his son to the person who will use him most?
I think there's another ripple in that. I don't know what Paragus knows, but perhaps he doesn't realize Frieza's full intent. But if he were to find out that Frieza killed King Vegeta, good! I was coming back to kill that son of a bitch. I hated that guy. Now, he didn't want the whole world killed, but he did want to bring down that king for banishing his son. So if Frieza did that, so be it. They have an alliance because Prince Vegeta is still alive, and it's promised that Frieza gets to kill Goku because of past drama, but Paragus gets his revenge against the Vegetas by having Broly challenge the prince.
So Broly here, I can tell his arc from the moment that they're rescued by Frieza's people. I'm like, okay, he's going to be the one they fight, but he's not inherently evil. He's just being used, and so they're going to team up at the end. I thought they'd team up to attack Frieza. I should have expected his Cobra Commander type retreat into the next movie or episode, but I knew that Broly would end up friends with these other guys. It just was going to take some animated fighting to get there.
And again, that's what happened with Vegeta and Goku as well. It does seem to be that alliances are formed. If you hang around long enough, my enemy becomes my bestie. I think Broly is sort of the relatable character. If you don't understand the mythology, if you don't know what's going on, you've all had parents that had expectations for you that you couldn't fulfill. And so in thinking of this in terms of a Disney movie, the story arc is my dad keeps me under lock and key and I want to be free. And how can I be free? Well, this chili and lemon character, they're going to blow in. They're going to steal the remote control that controls my shock collar. They're going to feed me water and teach me what I've been missing. And they're going to tell me to stop wearing the ears of my monster friends. Like, he's got this really sad story about, like, I had one friend. It's like a giant grassy monster head.
Looked like a Cheshire cat to me.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
yeah, it's like a ferret dog or something.
But it's the one thing he could, like, train to be a fighter with. And my dad, like, didn't like it for some reason and shot his ear off. And now I wear it as a fashion statement. It's, like, too much. But it's so Dragon Ball. Let me just say, like, that just, in going for the melodrama, it just makes you laugh.
It all adds up to what you're saying, is that Broly is a relatable character. I mean, like you said, he's been under lock and key. The only human contact he's had has been his father. And now he has these two new friends, and the first thing we see him do is stick up for, you know, one of these two new people when some big muscle-bound jerk is, I think, hitting on the girl. I think that was what the scene was trying to portray.
Yeah. Chile, yeah.
Yeah. And so he sticks up for him, and, you know, so that, I mean, he has a good heart from what we can tell. He's just been sheltered.
But if you had seen the three previous Broly movies, all the guy does is rage. I mean, like, what fans love about him is, like, when he loses it, it's like hours and hours of screaming and breaking things. Like, he is...
like my dad.
Yes, exactly like your father. Yes, he is just drama. He's drama all day long. And so this would be new. I would say fans are going to be touched to see a sensitive side to Broly. I was. I mean, a little bit. I don't want to over-exaggerate it. But there are little moments of heart here that I had not seen surface before. When we see little Goku put in the pod and fly away from his mother, when we see Broly talk about the ear of his friend that he wears as a sash, they're not always successfully dramatic, but you're seeing an attempt at something that the series rarely went for. I rarely saw them go for pathos.
That's good context, because what we're about to get into is a fight where, I think we kind of talked about this earlier, is where I'm not sure who we're supposed to be rooting for, honestly. As somebody who's never seen this franchise before, is Broly the guy that we're ultimately rooting for? Is Goku? I don't know. All I know is that Frieza is definitely a bad guy, because we've seen him destroy a world.
I think Goku is comic relief, and that translates as everyone should like him. There's a joke that they tell that they never get tired of, and that is Goku loves to eat. And, like, he's always stuffing his face, and he's like, blah, 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 and he's got to do it for his fighting. And they do it a little bit here at the island or whatever. But, like, because he's kind of dumb and doesn't understand words and is just kind of average in a lot of ways, not in his abilities as a fighter, but in a lot of other ways, he doesn't have a lot of ambition or, you know, dastardly plots. I would say most people are going to gravitate towards him as some kind of likable figure. Am I wrong? Did you like Goku?
I didn't dislike him. I mean, I could see how he could be the main character, and I kind of got that vibe from him. But I'm just saying it wasn't explicit in this movie who the hero might be.
I only knew because I travel in that world. I go to San Diego Comic-Con when it used to happen. Many other cons, I knew Goku by sight, if not by name. And so I knew he was the main character. He was our Ash, if you will. But to me, this movie's entitled Broly. The main character is Broly.
Interesting. Okay. See, I think my perspective is entirely colored by the fact that Broly was a villain for three movies, like, and never had a turn for being good. Never. So the thought for me, as having enjoyed him in the previous ones, is how will they be able to defeat him because he's so powerful? This is the first time that they're actually going to coerce him to be part of their good guy team. In previous ones, they get out of it by sort of hook and crook.
Well, not to get too far into the weeds, but where do those stories take place then? Because I feel like we see the entire Broly backstory, right? We see him sent off to this planet as a child and then leave for the first time and go directly to Earth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everyone's always lucky that he is banished again. He always ends up alone. And so one of them is kind of cheating. He was sort of a genetic recreation. He was kind of like a swamp monster version, so it wasn't really Broly. So I don't know if that one even counts. He melted. That one melted. But in the other cases, he never is allowed near society.
Hmm. So it's not necessarily every story we see is canon then, right? Like,
no, none of them are, because none of them were written by Akira Toriyama.
Mm-hmm.
So this is Akira Toriyama saying, how do I take this character that people like that I didn't create and bring him into my creation?
So this is the first official Broly story.
It is a retelling of the story in a way that fits within canon.
This hurts, but it's no different than Star Wars. I mean, I get it, but it hurts.
Yeah. Yeah, again, I can't take this perspective of a fan because I'm not one. I'm just someone that soaked in this for the last 8 months when I had a free minute.
If it makes any difference, I call bullshit when Star Wars does this too. Like, Thrawn was part of canon, and then they took it out of canon, and now they're reintroducing him to canon as fan service. And Darth Maul's alive with robot legs and showing up in Solo. I cry bullshit about all of that too. So at least I'm not a hypocrite. I just find it all to be shit.
I'll just put it out there. Dragon Ball many times in the movies keeps no consistency. Well, what they do in the movies and what they do between the various series, they'll repeat themselves and change things a lot. And again, they've now created this idea that there's a multiverse. So maybe it's all canon somehow, but No, not really. In the end, it's a big old messy thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if they were good writers, they'd just drop a line in there somewhere. It's like, you know, Broly's back somehow, and then just move on, like as if there's no big deal. That's how they explain the Emperor being back. So
think of this as the first time you're ever experiencing Broly. I think that's what the creator would like for you to think. We know that you love him from those three other movies that I wasn't really involved in. Now you're going to see him at his most human. As you pointed out, Arnie, he's been given an arc. He will be able to have a future and people that like him. He won't be left alone on a planet like they're wont to do in those movies, knowing they had to do that because, again, the movies are disconnected from the manga. And so they didn't have the opportunity to say, Broly will be back next week. They had to find a way to like bring him in and then throw him away. And so this is bringing him in and keeping him.
Fair enough. I mean, I think Arnie hit on it too, where it's just like any franchise that has some fan favorite stuff or has hopped mediums, there's going to be some fudging to get things on the big screen. You know, I mean, even with Deadpool, Deadpool has a whole life in comics for years and years. Now he's on the big screen. So some of that throw away, stuff that people like, go with.
And I'm just going to put it out there that, again, not a fan, but trying to find my connection to the material. The fun for me in those mangas particularly were the fights. That was what I really cared about. I didn't care about the soap opera and the drama and what's canon and what's not canon. The fun was watching like people thrown through entire mountains and just amazingly long, protracted, they live style. Just when you think it's over, the fight continues for another 100 pages. That kind of stuff is where the franchise ultimately shines. And I do feel like they just give the floor to the best animated fights they've ever produced. The manga is on the page. And every time I saw the anime, I'd be like, yeah, I liked it better on the page than what they're able to draw for this kind of crummy looking series. Here, I am satisfied. I finally feel like this is exactly what it needs to be when we get these throwdowns between Vegeta and Kakarot and Broly.
When everyone assembles on the ice continent, as they call it, all my problems kind of go away for a little while. But all the extraneous characters, the god of war, all these people are gone.
Yeah, right. All that shit. Let's just call it what it is.
Yeah.
The shit is out, and now we can all understand what they're doing. They're having fun beating on each other.
And admittedly, I only knew from the video games what a Super Saiyan was, but I was following along with that as, you know, Broly got the upper hand, and then they'd Super Saiyan out, and...
You know, when they get their hard rock music going and we get these extreme close-ups of, like, muscles bulging and eyes, like, dilating and the growling and all of this stuff, and then we get these color scheme just really dramatic...
I'm sitting here enjoying the spectacle on screen, and I'm like Arnie, I'm following along with, you know, I don't know the intricacies of, you know, what, you know, going super to different levels means or anything like that, but I'm getting the concept that, you know, the angrier they get or the more intense they get, the more powerful they become, and they form a new version of themselves or whatever. That's great.
The hairdos. I never knew you could go redhead. I always thought the most powerful was blonde. I'm like, that's racist. But, like, you could actually get bigger than that with the red hair.
Go ginger Saiyan. You know, I mean, it's all out there. But, I mean, I'm enjoying watching them drag their faces through mountains and being punched through rocks and everything. But then after a while, it hits me. It's like, what are the stakes? What constitutes a victory in this fight? Because, I mean, we know death is on the table. We've seen Frieza murder people. He just murdered Broly's dad. In front of us, so...
But you can always get the Dragon Balls and wish people back to life. I can't tell you how many times people have died and they've done just that. So, like, even death has no stakes in this universe.
Okay. But I guess I'm wondering what the end of a fight is going to look like. You know what I'm saying? Like, in a movie like Rocky, we understand... Even if you don't understand boxing, you understand, like, oh, if you beat the bell or if you knock somebody out, that's a victory. In comic book movies, you see the heroes fight until Cap knocks Tony's arc reactor out, you know? I mean, here, I don't know what the end game is.
I'm imagining the end game is, like, how many children in Japan are, like, flopping over in front of their TV and having a seizure. Because you remember that blue-red stroke thing that took them out with Pokemon? Some of this shit, like, puts that to shame. I mean, like, I was having, like, my tongue roll back a few times.
Truth.
Yeah, this is also just a lot of rock'em sock'em beat-em-up, and it was fun at first, and then it just became kind of numbing. It just was. It was kind of like background music of combat. And I was going with it, though. It was fine until this cheat code comes in, for lack of a better term, where all of a sudden a wise person telepathically says, come to me if you're overmatched. And so they just get to go see Wise Master Yoda, learn new ways to fight, and then go back hours later. You know, if you know the whole universe, maybe it feels set up. But here, this feels like a real cheat of an ending.
Yeah, Piccolo, he's not their master by any means. He is not Master Roshi. He didn't teach them anything. I don't know when the psychic link thing started happening. I'm not familiar with it. Maybe it's something introduced in the Super series that I didn't get very far into Super. Like, I did all of the background stuff before the Dragon Ball Super series. Piccolo has had a lot of different lives, so to speak. And so why he's suddenly hanging out on a rock and encouraging them to dance into one being, I cannot say. But it does feel like humor has always been a part of Dragon Ball. They'd never want it to be played too seriously. And so the idea that these two, one's going to be really embarrassed to do the moves, and they keep messing up and, you know, turning into squat fat people or old thin people, or it's the kind of humor that we also called the task in Pokemon, quite frankly. If you remember those shorts where sometimes it would just try to emulate the Looney Tunes slapstick, that was never my favorite stuff.
I actually really, really thought when they did the dance, and I know I saw the fingers didn't quite line up tip to tip, but when he came out, this big-jawed fat dude, he's like, I'm ready to fight Broly. I'm like, that's kind of awesome that, like, one of you went in the other's stomach. I wanted to see that fight.
Yeah, do that. I kind of did, too. I was like, oh, yeah, we don't need another, like, golden-haired whatever. Like, yeah, let's see some different body types. Let's see some people with different moves.
Yeah, I'm taking E. Honda from Street Fighter, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I did appreciate the break, though. I mean, it was fun to get away from the fight for a minute and have a little bit of brevity. And just the visual joke here was good. I mean, the way they zoom into the fingers being misaligned was like, zhink! It was like, that gave me a little bit of a chuckle, you know? But then they throw stuff in like, we have to wait a half hour again. It's like, well, what's going on back on Earth then? How long are we going to wait half hours at a time.
What's going on? Are people being thrown into water and it's boiling into like steam and the glaciers have melted the lava? They've actually burrowed to the center of the earth. They've done everything they could possibly think of to like, yeah, have these epic battles to distract you. Yeah, I don't know that there is a lot to any Dragon Ball movie storyline. It's pretty common to see them cede the floor to spectacle and not have a lot of going on. I think you're to worry about Broly once his father is murdered. I think that that would be seen as a shocking, melodramatic turning point for the character, is that even though he didn't want to be controlled by Paragus, to have him lose him this way, have it blamed on the others. I think he knows Frieza did it because he's all of a sudden kicking Frieza's ass.
I thought it was because he was in like a Hulk-like rage and he would just attack anybody. And so by standing in front of Frieza, they made him just go and attack Frieza. They specifically say, let's trick him into attacking Frieza. Whereas Frieza said, your father was killed by a stray energy blast, which pissed Broly off more at Vegeta and Goku.
Yeah. Again, I don't get hung up on the motivations, or the whys or the how. It's just about watching the guy like shriek to the heavens and emit a nuclear explosion. Like, yes, that is why people like Broly, is that he is rage incarnate. And that this is him at his ragiest. And so we've never seen him rage out in this good of an animation.
I did like seeing somebody get punched through mountains. That was fun.
It also draws into the question, was his father just wrong? Or did his father know that, like, his ultimate power, that his father couldn't contain it? And he was jealous of that power? Because it seemed like his dad never wanted him to get to this stage. Because he said that he would destroy the universe, but he didn't. He learned to control it enough that he came back down. So, I don't know, is that a theme that they're trying to weave in there? Or is that just part of the exposition to let us know that this is the strongest you've ever seen Broly go?
Well, he died in the previous one. So, I feel like you're going to kill the father figure if you're going to try and honor the story previously. But this one, it does feel more like, I don't know, you guys could tell me what you see, but I feel like it's an overprotective parent that paid the price for trying to control their kids too much and not teach them how to use their power. He didn't try to teach them how to use his power. He tried to use his son's power for his own aims by keeping him under literally a collar, enslaved to him. That was why he maybe kind of deserved the fate that he got.
Yeah, I kind of felt like it was telegraphed that the father would be killed. I kind of saw that in order for, again, I saw Broly as our protagonist, and for him to break out and be able to become his own person and not just follow orders, his father had to die.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's sad about that one. We're sad about Bardock. Bardock is one of the hardest deaths in the Dragon Ball universe. We're sad Goku lost his dad. But this guy, meh. But what does that mean for Broly? How will he ever be able to tamp down his rage now that his mechanism for stopping is gone? What does that mean for him? Gogeta, as Vegeta and Goku have become, seem to have the upper hand. By being two and one, they can actually take him out with the blue laser magic. And really, Broly would die if he didn't have a girlfriend, if Chile didn't go and scoop up the Dragon Balls and make a wish.
Yeah, so that's how the fight ends. It went on for so long and there were so many sidetracks and everything. I kind of forgot like what the conclusion of the fight was, but it was that he got wished back to his home planet. Well, not his home planet, his place of refuge.
Yeah, I remember because she had the gun to that sniveling lackey's back.
I'd never seen that dude before. It looked like Kermit the Frog. I'm like, who are you? But yeah, she's got Kermit at gunpoint. That was awesome. Give me the Dragon Balls. Okay.
But then we get the make nice ending. I mean, Broly is whisked away and we don't really see much aftermath. As I've mentioned before, it annoys me that Frieza's just like,
next time, Goku, next time.
Mm-hmm. Particularly since Vegeta started this movie by saying all he wanted to do was kill Frieza. The fact that he's in this stronger fused body and just kind of walks away from Frieza. Again, it's a problem with all the movies because they don't want to disrupt the storylines going on in the show and in the manga.
And there are some dropped lines that Frieza's been dead for a long time and I thought that they had killed him previously. But you already mentioned that people come back.
They have. Multiple times. Again, if you really care, go watch the Frieza saga.
I don't care that much, but I kind of took it as, yeah, he died before and been caught in a tree sometimes, and a whole lot of stuff had happened that I'm not privy to.
Everyone's done everything in this universe. I'm just telling, like, everybody's had a kid, died, and come back from an astral plane. It's just, like, yawn.
But they're going to make friends. I didn't expect it to be this tentative. I really expected Broly would team up with Goku and Vegeta to fight Frieza at the end. Here I am saying this stuff like I know it. All these names. But instead, Broly just gets teleported out to save his life, but Goku finds him on the planet. He has some kind of sense that he can find powerful people wherever they are in the galaxy.
Fighters can smell the chi strength of other fighters, and so, like, they always know. But they end it, it's an inside joke, not really, but Broly's one line of note is that he's always screaming Kakarot. So they end it by Goku saying, we're going to be sparring partners, but don't call me Goku, call me Kakarot. Because we wouldn't want to lose that Broly, even though they're friends, even though they've somehow turned this villain into an ally. We still want to think of him as the guy that's all rage screaming Kakarot. He wouldn't be Broly without it.
So Justin Stewart, do you recommend Dragon Ball Super Broly? Justin.
This is a tough one. I mean, because it's almost like dropping somebody on the planet and showing them an episode of, like, General Hospital and saying, hey, what do you think about this series? It's like, wait, what? There's way too many questions, you know? So any of my problems with this movie are mostly just going to be with my lack of knowledge of the lore in the franchise. So I can't really say that I don't recommend it because I don't know enough about the franchise to say whether or not this was a good entry into its lore. I mean, as a standalone movie, I think there's enough here. If you're a fan of anime and you want to watch an hour and 40 minutes and see one of the coolest fights ever animated, yeah, there's something here for you. And maybe it will awaken something in you to go back and fill in a lot of these questions that I'm sure I know I have, and I think Arnie has too, might make you want to start from the beginning, wherever that might be. So I can't say I don't recommend it, and I can't say that I do recommend it. I guess what I would say is, if you're looking to get into Dragon Ball Z, I don't recommend starting here. I would start further back and work up to this.
Yeah, I'm not going to let you get out of that. The arrow's red or the arrow's green on the website. Which way is it?
It's tough. Like, we've seen so many bad movies. Like, I would recommend this above most of the Pokemon stuff we watch. So if that's going to be my scale, I would recommend this over a Pokemon movie.
I think that's a good scale, a good barometer to work off of.
So yeah, mild recommend.
Stuart.
And I don't have that questioning spirit of the franchise. I've seen a lot of it at this point. I've gone deep, and I'm not converted. I am not a fan of any of its incarnations. I am not going to keep watching the series now that we've done this review. I did not get a lot of personal satisfaction out of taking the journey. I didn't even find it as soothing as Pokemon, but, and it's a big but, I wholeheartedly agree that it, to me, it's the perfect introduction for a newbie curious to know what the franchise is. You guys are fixating on unanswered questions. I think those linger throughout, and it's not a series that is going to reward you asking deep questions. What you should appreciate it from it, what I most enjoyed from my 8 month deep dive, was staring at those comic book pages and seeing how they could make these fights go on to incredible lengths. And I got to know who the cool villains were. I appreciated a Frieza, a Cell. You know, there were definitely times, boo, God, fucking boo, that I just, like, I don't want to be spending time on this. And so I feel like Broly is a good villain, if that's what we're calling him. Frieza is a good villain, and you're going to get an epic fight. And it took me back to my days when I was a teenager, the manga franchise that captured my imagination, Akira, watching Tetsuo and Kaneda go at each other. It's got some of that propulsive feel to the fight on the Ice Continent. I did think that it worked as a demonstration of what animation can do with fighting. And I think there's a little bit of heart and pathos too, if you care about the themes of fatherhood. They don't get totally lost in translation. I'm not going to say they're going to melt your heart, but I think they're there. And I think that, yeah, you get a sense of the comedy, you get the sense of the drama and themes, you get a sense of the action in this movie. It's not an anime landmark. It's not Akira, it's not Ghost in the Shell, it's not Spirited Away, but it's a memorably trippy sugar rush, and I will say for this movie, and not for Dragon Ball in totality, but for this movie, recommend.
Wow. Honestly, I didn't expect to be the lone holdout on this one. I didn't know, but I'm judging this movie by this movie. And whether or not this movie is an experience. And I, like Justin, completely recognize and acknowledge that, you know, Avengers Endgame might be a real shit movie if this is your first Marvel movie you're watching, you know? If you don't have the, what is it, 19 movies of backstory for those characters, there's probably not great character building going on right there for your first introduction to all of this. You're probably struggling just to keep up with the plot. And yet I recommended that because I am in that lore. Here, I'm not, and I think it will be a very hard sell to get me to recommend any anime. Honestly, I didn't recommend Akira.
Yeah, that's still killing me, I'll be honest. If you recommended this and not Akira, I would be mad.
I didn't recommend any of the animated Pokemon movies.
I mean, Mewtwo, the first one?
Maybe I recommended that one, but it was being really kind.
You didn't mean it. The hangover washed away and you were like, oh God, fuck no.
And I just felt like this was a decent opening, followed by a lot of confusion and a whole lot of, yeah, and punching and voiceover screaming. And again, it had its fun moments. This is a weak not recommend. I imagine if you're in the lore, this is probably, you love it. You know all the references, you know all the characters. As somebody coming in and this is my first exposure, it didn't make me want to see more. And that's why I have to give it a not recommend.
Yeah. Again, I would push away from the sense that it will get better if I know more about these people. I don't find that to be true. I don't feel like the backstory and learning more is anything more than following deeper and deeper into digressions. What it has to offer is clearly on display, and you either respond to it or you don't.
I mean, I think when I talk about lore, maybe Arnie's on the same page with me here, is not necessarily so much the characters and their development, but like even explanations of what these powers are and what they mean and how they were achieved.
Like you said, Justin, what are the stakes?
Yes.
I don't know that there's much. I mean, again, speaking as someone that's done a lot, I feel like there was sort of a formulaic, I never saw a deep probing of that stuff. I'm sure there are spiritual readings. There were definitely spiritual themes to the manga and to the anime, but ultimately, that kind of deep dive stuff, I feel like its pleasures are surface level and juvenile. I really don't see that there is another level to appreciate. I didn't find it. Let me put it that way. And I'm not looking any harder for it in the future.
All right. Well, that makes me feel a little bit better about not ever having dove into Dragon Ball, having it been just on the periphery of my life for many, many years anyway.
Yeah, it was a not great experience, I'll be honest. Going through that, it was more pain than not. It was more Boo eating ice cream than it was this movie. I think this, literally, if I think about it, this is the high point of the whole experience. This is the best it ever got.
Then I'm both happy and sad for you. Like, you went out on a high note, but you spent 8 months doing it.
Yeah. Again, watch Boo eating ice cream and you'll know what it was like for 8 months.
But I do want to thank Brian for supporting us and picking this movie for review. Stuart, you personally took on a lot of responsibility to deliver a great show for a patron who picked it. And I hope he's happy with his review. And it got two more green arrows than I thought it would coming in. So there's that.
Yeah, I thought I'd be the only one. I was like, I've gone deep enough that I'm going to appreciate what is being offered here. What I heard was that you guys didn't hate it. That there is something that everyone can enjoy here, but maybe not for a whole movie.
Yeah, that's me. I didn't hate it, but I didn't get into it at all. And by the end, the confusion I felt is what tipped the scale to the negative.
Oh, you need to make a friend of confusion if you're watching anime. Like, that's part of the fun, is not knowing what the hell is going on.
Yeah, there was enough confusion that I could roll with, but ultimately it was just, I was left with questions that I felt like should be answered in a standalone movie that just weren't.
Yeah, I do think they could have Americanized this and made it a close-ended story and answered a lot of these arcs, and it would be better for it. I definitely think you could tell this story better, but it honors the spirit of Dragon Ball. If you want to know what it's like to soak in that manga, that whole franchise experience, this is not a sellout picture, unlike that live-action one where they tried to make it palatable for Western audiences. This still has the original flavor that's been there since 1984.
And speaking of soaking it in, next month, patrons, stick with us as we review one of the biggest movies of all time. It was number one for a decade, right? Titanic.
Is it not number one anymore? I guess there have been some Star Wars movies.
Avatar beat it, and then The Force Awakens beat that, and Endgame's up there. You know, ticket prices went up too.
Yeah, right. But it's big. It's Titanic. It's James Cameron's epic love story, released the week of the sinking, the anniversary. In 1914, it went down in April. We're going to release that show for April patrons at that time. A movie that's been requested by one of our patrons, a movie that I like, and I have always feel I have to defend it, because it's got the unique perspective of being a popular movie that a whole lot of people despise. But I'm not one of them. I'm looking forward to returning.
I'm going
to
be listening to find out if Arnie owns the soundtrack.
I had my Celine Dion phase in the 90s. I'm not ashamed.
I am not surprised.
So thank you, patrons, every single one of you who've supported the show. We appreciate it so much. We will be back next month with Titanic, as well as the Dirty Harry shows that are on the feed. So until next time, I believe we're done here.
Bye then, I'll see you all later.
You realize we might not even be here when you return, right?
That's not a problem at all. As long as you're not too far away, I can find you.
Thank you to all the listeners who have backed us through our Podbean crowdfunding campaign. And we hope you've enjoyed this special bonus movie review podcast.
I basically don't understand a single thing you've said this whole time.
Without patrons such as yourself, we couldn't keep doing the shows we put out every single Tuesday. So thanks to you all.
Okay then, I am enjoying his performance. But for your sake, I hope he keeps putting on a good show.
And a special thanks to Brian White for his tremendous support of Now Playing and for picking Dragon Ball Super Broly for our hosts to review.
Thank you for your generosity, sir!
If you enjoy Now Playing, please head to iTunes and leave us a 5-star listing. It's the best way to help spread the word about the podcast.
So, are these guys your friends now?
You can also compare notes with us on Letterboxd. Go to letterboxd.com/nowplaying. To see what our hosts are watching when we're not recording podcasts. And follow Now Playing on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and our YouTube channel.
It seems like the party may have started without us.
Now Playing Podcast is produced by Arnie Carvalho.
Go so far as to call him a freak.
Associate produced by Jason Latham.
I have such high expectations for you. For your sake, I hope you live up to them.
Now Playing is edited by Heath and Arnie.
Now he's snapped. The guy's broken.
Now Playing credits read by Brock.
If he wanted to talk to his men, he could have just used the radio.
The opinions expressed on Now Playing are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the opinion of Venganza Media Incorporated.
They're useful, are they not?
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with the motion pictures reviewed or otherwise referred to herein.
Makes no difference to me now.
All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of the respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review and no infringement is intended.
I assume you get the picture.
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of Venganza Media Incorporated and may not be used without the expressed written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
It's such a tragedy!
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2021, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
I believe we're done here.
That's enough preamble, Arnie. Why don't you kick us off with a little plot summary?
And I definitely can't wait for Arnie, who, again, maybe knows a few of these characters from a video game. I'm really curious to know what kind of sense this plot made for you.
I almost emailed you and was like, Stuart, you do it. But I thought it would be kind of a jerk move at the last minute.
No, this is more fun. It's like those old reading comprehension tests they used to give us where you read a story and they're like, well, what did you understand about it? Like, I want to know, what did you get out of this?
I'm interested to see how you summarize a plot that involves 45 minutes of fighting.
And when the two hear six Dragon Balls have been stolen from their friend Bulma, Bulimia?
Yeah, I wrote Bulimia for several weeks before I realized my mistake.
On the other side of the galaxy, on an inhospitable world, another Saiyan lives. Paragus. He asparagus?
Maybe.
Now that you said refrigerator.
I know. I did the same thing. I'm like, who else is a vegetable?
Broly is broccoli?
Mm-hmm.
And as Broly starts to lose, Frieza, some fan is going to be just outraged. Broly.
Yeah, it's also Saiyan, or at least that's the more common version of it. But Saiyan, you know, it's fine.
Just saying.
Just saying that Saiyan is not right. And fought quite a bit with his brother. Or it wasn't his brother, I'm sorry. That's his brother, someone else that got killed. Radish or something like that. Help me. God help me. 41 years ago. I don't know. 41 years, like, are they talking about the 60s? I don't know. Maybe.
41 years ago was 1980, Stuart.
Oh, shit. Jeez. I do that all the time. I'm like, you know, a long time ago. And then I'm like, oh, wait, no, the 80s. Yeah, that's the long time ago.
No, we're not old men reviewing Dragon Ball Z. What are you talking Damn. About?
Damn.
The guy paid to hear old men review Dragon Ball Z.
Here it is.
This is like the YouTube series of little kids turn on a PC from 1987, only in reverse.
But Paragus gets his revenge against the Vegetas by having Broly challenge the prince.
Revenge against the Vegetas. Sounds like a bad Saturday night.
Gonna need some prep H for that.
Mm. I've been putting that on for the last 8 months, let me tell you. Fighters can smell the chi strength of other fighters. And so, like, they always know.
Did you say the cheese strength?
Chi, you oh. know, like,
the Velveeta scale.
Yeah.
Well, everybody else came from a refrigerator.
I'm getting hungry. Let's wrap this up.